We're going to start the program today with Dennis Rugosa. Dennis is the sustainability advisor at Canola Council of Canada. He has a lot of interesting things that he's been working on, as well as the council itself represents the value chain of interests for growers for canola. It's one of the highest value agriculture crops, worth about $15 billion in Canada as well, so major import. Funnily enough, during this interview, it was pre-recorded a couple of weeks ago, we didn't actually ever get to, I was having such a good conversation with him, we never actually got to the part about using canola and possible biofuels and stuff like that. So we will actually, despite that being his introduction, we talk actually more about the, he was CEO of the British Columbia Scrap It program. So we talk about some of the car trade out schemes, stuff like that. He also do talk about just some general environment and business relationships, stuff like that as well. Very, very interesting. And hopefully we will have him back to eventually get to the Canola Council issues, which I had originally booked him for in the first place. We will get to Dennis. So again, this is Dennis Rugosa, the sustainability advisor at the Council of Canada.
I did my master's degree in environmental studies at York,
mm-hmm.
Not too far from you there. And yeah, it's been a long, interesting journey. When I graduated, I was a lonely soul out there.
So tell me a little bit about that, I guess, then, just kind of starting out, and it certainly wasn't the cool rage that the environment seems to be, or it feels sometimes like it is these days, you know, with everything from it being a lot more prevalent in our media, whether the coverage is good or bad, it seems to be covered more. Also, you know, companies, you know, greening themselves in some cases, truthfully, in some cases, as far as greenwashing. But do you have any sort of look back, or just as far as how the landscape has changed since you left school?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question because it's dramatically changed. We're now in a situation where I think when I went to grad school, there were only two universities in Canada offered degrees in the environment, if you will, or environmental studies. I believe that was York and Waterloo, and that's one of the reasons I went to York. I was from Saskatchewan, right? So it was one of the places that had a master's degree program. The only place in Canada that had a master's degree program. Now, I think almost every single university in Canada offers degree programs in environmental studies or equivalent.
Mm-hmm. So if not entire departments based on the U of T recently, or in the as of the last few years, has a Center for the Environment and that sort of thing that has a whole suite of programs for environmental students. So
it's like rabbits, you know, everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess maybe that would be a really good place to start. I mean, based on your experience, we've seen an explosion of at least, you've identified it at the very least, educational opportunities in the environment. Have you seen this result in change in the way that that businesses relate to the environment outside of it being more popular? Have businesses really been greening? Has this been something that's been a legitimate change?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, if just look in the, an indicator of this would be jobs advertised, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you go back 30 years ago and said, well, how many jobs are advertised out there? People have an environmental background in environmental studies or specific areas within that field, and there are almost none. Today, if you pick out newspapers or whatever source of ads you're looking for, there's a wealth of ads out there. Many companies really have moved to adopt the philosophy and the practice related to this, and they're in varying degrees of scale, I would say. But certainly many, many, many companies have done this, whereas previously there were no such jobs before.
Tell me a little bit, that relates, I think, to the Scrap It program that you run. If you can tell us a little bit about that story. So if I understand correctly, you helped start it while you were working with the government of British Columbia, and then a few years later they asked you to come back and help run the program. Do you want to just tell the listeners a little bit about what the Scrap It program?
Yeah, well, the Scrap It, it's called the BC Scrap It Program. It's active only in British Columbia, obviously, and the history around the program was it was one of the first programs to be actually an emissions offset program. And back in the mid-1990s, the government of British Columbia had been looking and taking very aggressive action to reduce smog-related pollutants, primarily in the greater Vancouver area. And one of the ways to do that would be look at all the different kinds of sources of emissions. And one of the interesting sources of emissions was when you actually refuel your vehicle. So as you may know, with older vehicles, that when you pull up the gas station and you turn the hose on, quite often there's a cloud, an invisible cloud of hydrocarbons that meet your face. There was new technology established that's been active in the U.S. for 30 years, I would say, called, and the technical name is stage 2 vapor recovery, because Stage one is when the big tanker trucks drive up to the gasoline stations, and when they fill up, all the vapors in the tanks are displaced by the liquid and vent into the atmosphere. So that those liquids, in turn, are hydrocarbons, which are part of the smog problem. So they solve that problem by ensuring that the vapors that do come back that would normally be displaced in the atmosphere are recaptured and go into back into the tanker truck and then go back into the terminal and eventually back in the refinery. So the equivalent to that, though, is when you fill up your own car or truck. And the technology there is called Stage 2 vapor recovery. And so we had proposed installing that. We, meaning the BC Ministry of Environment, when I worked there, had proposed installing that technology across all the refueling stations in the Greater Vancouver region. And we began a lot of detailed discussion with the oil industry about that and concluded that it was going to be very expensive. And really halfway through those negotiations with the oil industry, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced that it was going to require new technology in all new vehicles sold today, sold effective the model year 2000, which meant that you would no longer have vapors escaping into the atmosphere. They're going to be recaptured inside the vehicle. So if you had two vehicles, let's say a 1995 brand X and a 2005 same brand X, and you filled them up side by side, the 1995 vehicle would result in a cloud of hydrocarbons coming at your face. The 2005 vehicle wouldn't do that anymore. Hmm. So a lot of people today, when you fill up your vehicle, it's a very, very tight connection to the vehicle, and that results in the recapture of vapors. So that result was that the technology changed. We decided not to do that, but as part of the negotiation with the oil industry, we looked at an alternate way of delivering the equivalent amount of emission reductions into the atmosphere and concluded that a scrap program would in fact do that because when you scrap older vehicles, they are super polluters. And I can tell you that studies that we've done in the scrapper program indicate some of these vehicles are from, on average, 60 times more polluting than a new vehicle. Let's say if you take a 1995 vehicle versus a 2005 or 2013 vehicle, they're about 60 times more polluting from a smog point of view. We've done some testing on vehicles that are 500 times more polluting. This is really not a surprise because if you look at old cars, they're run down. The technology is older. The parts have deteriorated. They've been poorly maintained, when you get 20, 25-year-old vehicles. So that result is we felt that we could really make a difference out there by having a program that would take those old, the super polluted vehicles off the road and have an equivalent emission benefit to the installation of the Stage 2 vapor recovery system at the gasoline station.
So, Dennis, one of the things that jumps out at me right there, though, it's a question I've always been very interested in things like the study of full cost accounting and life cycle analysis and that sort of thing. So I'm interested. I'm sure you had some studies during when you were analyzing what the best way to deal with this issue was. I'm interested to know how you compare. For instance, if you do convince someone to pull, say, that 1995 brand X off the road, in what way or how do you look at? Okay, well, you've taken the more polluting vehicle off the road, and that person then drives a less polluting vehicle. Has it taken into account the sort of carbon and water and resource cost of building that new vehicle? How is that all balanced?
Yeah, I mean, we don't do detailed analysis around that because we make a couple of assumptions that vehicle is coming off the road sooner or later, anyways, and that what we're doing is we're offering incentives for people to retire it more early. So that from a, your point of view about your points you just made about, carbon issues and so on, sooner or later that vehicle's coming off the road. There are no 50-year-old vehicles left in the road, right? So
right. It's
all going back in the recycling system. I mean, all our vehicles go back, are properly recycled, and go into the steel making system and come back as toasters or whatever,
Right.
So, but what we believe we make a difference, and scrap programs do that, is you... normally, the vehicles we get are not what I'd call beater vehicles. They're vehicles that are being driven, they're fully licensed, except they're super polluters, and they're likely going to be on the road another 5 or 10 years. Mm. So we offer incentives to those people to do early retirement. So the early retirement benefit is a direct smog reduction benefit.
Mm-hmm. Well, because they're not...
We know if we get off the road sooner, then we have it's replaced either by a bus pass or a bike or car share or another new vehicle, then in fact there will be significant smog reduction benefits. And there have been studies done about our program and its effectiveness, and it clearly shows that, because we've removed like 33,000 vehicles off the road in BC. It's a lot of vehicles.
Yeah.
But they're all 60 times polluting more average. So you can imagine what the impact it's had on the air quality. And generally speaking, if you look at the Vancouver region over the last 15, 20 years, there's been a significant improvement in terms of reduction in smog. I mean, we're having fewer and fewer bad air days, if you will. I can't speak for big cities like Toronto, Montreal, because you have very hot summer weather there. But certainly in the Vancouver region, there's fewer smog day alerts than there ever has been. And we're part of that solution. We're not the only solution that's doing that, but we're part of that.
I'm interested if you can tell me a bit more about. I mean, you've had sort of a unique experience. You've been in the public sector and the private sector, and it looks like there's some even some nonprofit type work that you've done. And of course, you also have your own consulting, so you've had an opportunity to look at many other people's businesses as well as your own work experience. Something that we like to talk about on this program is the relationship between both citizens and government, but also business and government. So having had a little bit of experience in all sectors and as your own private citizen, can you comment at all about ways that business and government could work together in the best sorts of ways? Just for context on that, I've asked a lot of business people about where they think the position for policy on, not choosing the new technology, but just in sort of inspiring inspiration. Can you comment at all about that, about how governments and businesses can work together for the environment?
Yeah, I think there's two dimensions to this issue. One is what I call public policy and how that's generated and the net effect of that and how that reflects the public will and how that's expressed by government. And secondly is how government responds, how private industry responds to that. So on the public policy side, generally speaking, if you look at the environmental areas as an example, there's been substantial changes over the last couple decades in this area. There's a huge sensitivity now to issues around sustainability, for example. Just huge. I mean, for example, an organization called Sustainability Consortium, which consists of membership by the 100 largest corporations in the world, the Walmarts, the Safeways, the so on and so on. We're talking world-scale multinational corporations are all part of that particular organization looking for solutions in response to their perception of the public interest and also how that's expressed in the marketplace. So it isn't just sort of government. It's also a sense by major companies that their customers care about this. So governments can come along with regulations sort of and set the ground rules for sort of the minimum conditions. But in fact, we're now seeing that there's a lot more activity by private industry to go beyond that. And certainly on the environmental issue over the last 30 years, dramatic changes there. Now you're seeing it more formally. You're seeing it formally in areas like certification, like some of the supply chains, and a supply chain could be from farm field to end customer and everything in between that, that many of these supply chains have now moved forward with full independent certification against pretty rigorous standards. So we're kind of at the beginning of that, I would say, in any kind of formal way. You see some of it. There's bits and pieces around it in different sectors of the economy. You're now seeing it in plastics, for example, bioplastics. You're seeing it in the food sector. Organics, for example, the certification systems. Some of them may not be perfect, but as a general direction in society, that's the way we're headed. I would say the wheels are speeding up. The train is going faster down that track. And the track is a fairly new track,
mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing, I would say. How it's expressed is different by sectors, by company, and so on. But in some ways, I would say industry is ahead of government on that one, because in fact they're anticipating the future and they're doing it for competitive advantage reasons, and also they've done a lot of market research with their customers to find out what their customers' interest is and what their priorities are. So depending on the sector out there that As a result, companies are really being, some are being very aggressive in this field, and are taking the issue of environment and sustainability very, very seriously.
One of the things that we've been noticing over the past few years here at the program, and as have many other agencies in Canada, is that, you know, regardless of anyone's position on the government itself, the current federal government's most of their efforts in the sector of the environment are kind of demonstrably centered around removing regulation, or as opposed to introducing new legislation. That the most of their actions with regards to the environment have been around taking rules away. One of the comments that we've heard from many business leaders for years now is that in many cases, businesses would there was, for instance, during Stéphane Dion with Green Shift here in Canada a few years ago, that a lot of companies were saying, you know, we would love to proceed on some of these environmental issues, but we need an indicator from the government as so that we can plan. And we can't be effective businesses and do what we were designed to do, which is make people money, if we don't know where policy and regulation is going to be in the future. So with that as a context, with this current stage, I mean, you've just mentioned now that you think that businesses, and I would tend to agree with you, that businesses in general, depending on the sector that you're talking about, are increasingly becoming interested and are becoming increasingly sincere in their interest about the environment. In your opinion, though, is there an upper limit to that with so few positive indicators from the government, whether you mean positive as a sense of like, progressive, or positive as in they are removing regulation rather than adding regulation? Is there really much room for businesses to capitalize on all this new energy and excitement of their customers when government seems to not want to be involved in that at best?
Well, I think the answer is maybe sector dependent. If you look at maybe, let's say, the resource sector, mm-hmm. Which tends to be involved with the extraction and production of raw materials, it's very regulatory driven, because that's a requirement out there. If you look at the contrast that with say the food sector, in which there are regulations that affect food production, no question about that, and those are required. But many of the if you just walk down the supermarket shelf and look at the different products out there and sort of say, how many of those are really governed by government regulation versus consumer driven issues? And I think I'd suggest that certainly in that particular sector, consumer preference and consumer understandings is probably the big driving factor for that particular sector. So it sort of depends, right, on what sector you're talking about and how the interface with government and how much interface is really required. I mean, for example, a box of cornflakes, certainly there's some government regulation that applies really upstream in the supply chain. But once you get into the processing area and go downstream to that, the market research and the customer interface is really what affects more of a product like that than would be government regulation. So I think the answer depends. Mm-hmm. It is also true that I think having a level playing field is important for companies, because from a competitive point of view, it's important to know that if they're making certain investments to achieve a certain objective, that everybody else in the sector is doing the same thing. And so I think maybe some industries are wary of that and don't want to move ahead of regulation if the regulation's not there. And I think it's fair to say also that governments are also, industries also wary of the fact that even though there may be signals from government that there might be a regulation in a certain area, that in fact it could be the case that regulation is never forthcoming. I personally know of examples where companies have made significant investments ahead of regulation to find out that regulation never happened, and they had overinvested, if you will, versus their competition. So government needs to bring certainty, policy certainty, regulatory certainty to the table, that's for sure. Whether it's enough regulation or not, that's always a debate, I would say. Mm-hmm. You have to look at the specific issue to really make the argument one way or the other.